Hello, and welcome to Too Many RPGs, a show about RPG shows. You didn't think of something for the bit.
I super didn't think of something for the bit.
It's like a thing that is like not actually the thing that this show is like, but it's very weird and Ethan is funny.
I think I've done that one before.
Oh no!
I'm quite certain I have messed up an intro before, like that, exactly. It's actually a show about me and Lauren talking to a guest, because I don't think we've ever established that, about their favorite RPG show.
So I learned something very exciting this week about all of the shows that we have covered on here on Too Many RPGs. And that is that every single show that we have covered on this show is a Diana Jones Award winner.
That seems unlikely.
Yeah, the Diana Jones Award is an annual award for excellence in gaming.
Okay.
In, like, for, I think, specifically RPGs, like, tabletop RPGs.
So it was awarded to Project Athena, Star Wars The Dark Side, Dungeon Rats, like, all these?
It was awarded this year because they do it at Gen Con.
Okay.
They present it at Gen Con. And this year, it was awarded to actual play. Just all of it.
The concept?
The concept of actual play, yes.
Okay. Who did they hand that award to?
They did hand it to a guy. I don't remember the guy's name.
Oh no, there's a guy who embodies the entirement of actual plays? That guy's probably... He's probably got too many RPGs inside of him.
I think they just... He just accepted it on behalf of everybody.
Oh, okay.
Because you know what? Also, this means that we are also award winners.
Are we?
Yeah, because we do actual play.
I'm not here.
Not here, but like in our other lives.
Yes, our other lives. The ones we left behind so we could become expert podcastmancers.
Yes.
Okay. Podcastamancer.
Yeah. Podcastamancer?
I'm going to keep... I'm adding that to my list of things I am.
Okay. Anyway, the point is, it's kind of exciting that people, like, essentially the award was given to actual play because it's been, in the committee's opinion, one of the things that have most... that have been responsible for, like, the resurgence in popularity of the hobby. And it has been the thing that has popularized tabletop gaming the most, like, since the Satanic Panic. So, actual play, right up there with Satan.
Speaking of actual plays and podcasts, let's bring in our guest! This week we have Jessica talking about WanderQuest.
Hello! Yes, I'm Jessica, Little Cup of Joe on the Twitters. I participate in encounter roleplay things on their Twitch channel, and I listen to a lot of encounter roleplay things on their podcasts, of which WanderQuest is one, and it's my favorite one so far. So, that's why we're talking about it.
Yes, yes. So Encounter Roleplay is really good at trying to show off a whole bunch of different systems. What system is WanderQuest?
WanderQuest is one of their D&D 5e shows. I don't think it's modified, really. Sydney, the Dungeon Master, seems to play it pretty straight. I haven't noticed anything that appears to be very homebrewed, I guess is the best way to put it.
All right. I don't know much about WanderQuest except that it is very intense. Is that, like, because of the characters or because of the story?
I would say it has a heaviness to it, but it's not grimdark type of intensity. It's more very emotionally heavy because you have this story there. First of all, setting the scene, Sydney the Dungeon Master is a woman, and then the other players, all the players are also women, and all of their characters are also women. So it's all ladies. And the kind of the thrust of the story has got a lot of these themes of like family and what family means. And there's certain elements where there talks that's kind of like a mother's love. I'm not spoiling too many things, but there's a lot of mothers with children involved. And it's either mothers who are terrible mothers or mothers who are wonderful mothers who are mama bears out to save their children. One of the player characters is, in fact, well, Astrid is a scholar. Her children go missing. That's part of her backstory. Mechanically, technically is a barbarian because the loss of her children has enraged her so much that she will stop at nothing to find them.
I mean, that sounds very accurate to motherhood.
Right? Like, one of the things that I liked about that, and particularly Astrid's character, is that that is... I never would have thought to do that for a barbarian. Mechanically, you just go, oh, okay, well, I'm Conan. Yay. I run around and I rage, or I'm a warrior of something and I rage and I fight. That's what I do. But she's completely turned that on its ear.
Which is interesting because the party also has another barbarian.
Yes.
Who is a little more traditional.
Yes. Lilymoon, the half-orc barbarian, comes from a tribe of half-orcs and it's her family tradition and she honors their ways and, you know, she's the tough of the party.
The tough.
She's kind of scary.
I just like, she's the tough.
Yeah, the people's barbarian.
End of conversation.
I believe that's what they referred to her at one point. The people's barbarian. Nice. But yeah, there's interesting twists on the characters. Astrid's the one that stands out to me the most, just because looking at her backstory and like the fact that she's a scholar and everything, you'd kind of think, oh, wizard, right? Or, you know, a spellcaster of some kind. Which is where I thought it was headed with her in her backstory. By the end of her backstory, you find out that nope, she's going to be a barbarian.
So yeah, why don't you walk us through the rest of the characters there and who plays them?
So we have, as I said, Sydney is the dungeon master. She's fantastic. And I can rave about her style momentarily.
My name is Sydney, and I will be your dungeon master for this journey.
There's Astrid, of course, the scholar barbarian, played by Allison.
I am playing Astrid Dane. Astrid is a human barbarian who doesn't yet know she's a barbarian. She is a scholar, a professor at the University of Aberth. She is also a young wife and a mother.
You may remember Allison from our Project Athena episode. She plays Kate O'Callaghan.
Ah, yes. Yes, thank you. I know she's in Pulp Thulu kind of things. Then there is Lilymoon, played by Anna.
This season, I'm going to be playing Lilymoon. She is a half-orc barbarian.
And then Delorata Grouse, played by Amy.
So today I am playing Del Grouse. She is a human rogue. She is right now in her day-to-day acting as a thief, pretty much exclusively targeting the wealthy.
And then Freela Hayleaf, played by Louise.
I'm Louise, and on WonderQuest I am playing Freela Hayleaf, who is the little, very optimistic, very naive halfling druid who just wants to find the good in the world and is struggling a bit because there's currently not that much good in the world. In fact, there's quite a lot of bad in the world, but she's trying her best.
Who has been a Encounter Roleplay cast member on a few various things. So Lilymoon, as we mentioned before, is the half-orc barbarian who is much more... She's playing the barbarian thing pretty straight. She has a big scary axe. She rages and she swings the axe at things and does damage.
Swings axe, kills things.
Yes, exactly. She's there to hit things. Del is a rogue. They're all level 3 characters. I don't know what archetypes they are, however. They never really explicitly say, but you don't really miss it.
That's something I found kind of interesting, is the mechanics of the game are very underplayed.
Yes, there's combat every now and then, but it's when they get into combat, it's very narratively driven, and it's not, you know, they do roll dice and you hear them call out the numbers and things like that. It's just kind of a side effect of what they're doing. They do the narrative and they talk about what they try to do. They roll and they see if they succeed or not. It's a lot less like, I try to hit her. I do 20 points of damage. It feels less like a combat and more like they're kind of telling that story. And it just happens to be an action sequence, which is one of the things I kind of like.
Mm-hmm.
None of the cast explicitly like is showing up being like, I'm the party druid. They just happen to have these abilities. So the mechanics, they just kind of support who the characters are, which I find appealing.
I think D&D can be really good for that, for just like the mechanics kind of getting out of the way of the story community. You know, people like to think of, a lot of times you hear like D&D versus story games, which I think is kind right. of like a very...
It's a weird way to look at it.
Yeah, it's like a very silly definition. Yeah, I definitely think that there are really robust mechanics in D&D, mm-hmm. but you can totally just not, like, they're not the focus. And I think one of the great things with podcasting and actual play is that you do have, you can just edit out all of the dice rolls and all of the math so that you can just get to what actually happens.
Right. Yeah, you can cut out if there's a point at which combat becomes a slog where you're literally just calling numbers out to each other and dealing damage that way, and it gets very, very video gamey. You can cut all that out. Which makes it a little more appealing to an audience that's there to listen for the story.
Yeah. Because I think we forget that there are a lot of people who like actual play, podcasts especially, who are not interested in the game of D&D.
Right.
Or whatever game the podcast is playing. They want to hear the story being told.
Right. Or you know, maybe they're completely brand new and they throwing all these mechanics at them might turn them off a little bit or kind of scare them away at first.
You know what I do really like about podcasts, though, is they get that dicefully very good.
That's true.
I don't know if you've noticed just the sound of dice. Like, most of them probably have like a dice box.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're like, I'm going to do this thing. And you hear that dice noise. Which
it's a good noise.
Well, but it's like, we lose that a lot in like streams and stuff because they're usually using like Roll20 or Fantasy Grounds or that sort of thing. And you don't get that sound. And right. It's very interesting to be in a podcast setup where you actually do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I do enjoy the Roll20 Fantasy Ground style because I think seeing the numbers is cool, because that's always something that I find really exciting around the table is you see somebody and you look at their face and then you see the one with your own eyes and you're like, oh no.
Yeah.
But since you can't do that on a podcast, you know, it's kind of that trade-off of like, I can't see the numbers, but I get that good, good roll sound.
Right, well, and that's like, the sound of the dice rolling on the table is a very, especially if you are a tabletop gamer, it's a very visceral kind of sound.
Yeah.
It makes you feel like you're there or like you're playing or, you know, that sort of thing. Everybody enjoys rolling real dice, I think, more than digital dice. But there are advantages to the digital tabletops, particularly for streaming.
Certainly.
All we need is just like good digital tabletop dice roll sounds.
Yes.
You know?
That's the thing they're missing. Like, well, I think Roll20 does. Do that. There is a, I think they have a little bit of a sound, but
it makes the boop.
Yeah.
Noise.
Yeah. Yeah, that.
I'm not such a fan of the boop. But see, I would like to replace the boop with a
with like an actual dice clatter.
Yeah.
Yeah, Fantasy Grounds doesn't make any kind of noise. We obviously on Encounter Roleplay, that is what they're using these days. I know you use it in the one that I am a cast member on, and it's got a tabletop. You can like throw your dice around and fiddle with them when you're not actually using them.
They have those like fun animated dice. You can play with them, but just where are the sounds?
Yeah. There's like, basically, as long as you don't throw them into the little content area where the numbers appear, they just roll around and you can fiddle with them. if they land, as I'm fiddling with my dice, if they land in that little space, then they will actually generate a roll and you kind of want to avoid that.
Got it. Yes. Where did we leave off?
Sorry, we got real excited about sounds.
Yeah, we got excited about dice.
Yeah, so
imagine that.
So explain to me, how did all of these characters get together? What is their goal? I mean, obviously one of them is trying to get her children back.
Yep.
But what are the rest of them up to?
So this goes into one of the things that I find interesting about the way WanderQuest is playing out as a campaign story. It's not high adventure like you typically get with D&D. The characters are off on a quest. They're off to go get treasure or doing any of that stuff. It plays out almost more like a mystery or like one of those suspense thriller type of things in a way, because you have the mystery of, you know, Astrid is looking for her children because she came home one day, her whole place was like massacred basically. The children were stolen. That was like the only clue that she got. Lily Moon has some family drama with her half, I think he's her half brother. I don't remember. It's been a while since I listened to the early episodes. That like disappears under dubious circumstances, which are very shady and dark and frightening. And then Del, her family is basically the worst. That That's all I'm gonna say about that.
Oh gosh, I forgot about that. Yeah, yeah.
Her family is the worst. And then you have Freela, who her mother, she loses her mother after a long bout of illness, but it's also dubious circumstances, and her father kind of disappears after that, seemingly responsible. So there's all of these little mysteries that are set into their backstories that kind of draw them together, starting out initially looking for missing children because there was someone else that also had that. One of the NPCs they encounter is also missing her children, and of course Astrid is interested in chasing these clues, and it kind of leads them along over time into this bigger mystery of, I don't know what yet, I'm not caught up, but it's getting weird and scary. So yeah, it doesn't play out like an adventure. It plays out, you know, these women are thrown together because they have all of these unresolved mysteries that they're trying to find their families, their missing family members, they're trying to get involved, or in Del's case, they're just trying to get the heck away and want nothing to do with any of it, but they're stuck. And they start to find that all of these various things may not be entirely unrelated to one another.
I always like when players will create backstories for their characters that imply they've been doing something with their lives before they went adventuring, because I think it's very easy to be the trope of, like, in D&D land, you can just grow up and become an adventurer.
Right. It's like, I always wanted to be an adventurer. I trained my whole youth for this moment.
I spent my entire childhood becoming level one. But then, you know, if you're not like 18 years old and off to see the world, what were you doing with your lives to get you? Why weren't you level one?
Yeah, like, what if you're 40? Like, that's a long time before you decided to adventure. What were you up to?
I DM my home game, and one of my players like randomly rolled his age. And so he's like a 620-year-old elf.
Oh.
And I was like,
okay.
And we started at level one. And I was like, what were you doing for 600 years?
Clearly nothing that involved adventuring if he's starting at level one.
Please explain to me how you spent 600 years at level zero.
It's kind of funny to think about that, because in more classical D&D, like your second and your third editions, there were actually mechanics for level drain.
Oh gosh, yeah, that's true. Like, weren't zombies pretty bad about doing that?
Not zombies. It was like shades and shadows. Undead. Lots of your more like spookier incorporeal undead.
Yeah.
We're good at just stealing literally your experience.
Oh God, that's terrifying.
It's bad news. You could be a 40-year-old human adventurer who is level one, who has been adventuring his entire life.
You just kept running into like shades and banshees.
Stuff. That's actually like a pretty sweet player character hook.
That's true.
Yeah.
You're a seasoned adventurer and you have like one bad run-in with some kind of nasty shade.
And you're like, that would be so frustrating because you'd be like, I know how to do this, but my body can't do the thing.
Oh, that's
I'm gonna level paladin this time so I can kill them.
It's like, I've changed my mind. I'm going to be a different class now.
I've been a fighter my entire life. Let's go paladin.
Yeah, it's one of those things where with D&D in general, I like to play story first. And a lot of the shows that I like to listen to tend to veer in that direction, hence WanderQuest. I actually don't mind it how they underplay the classes so much. I don't really miss it. Like, the mechanics are so, so underplayed in this. That's why I was kind of like, I think it's vanilla D&D. I'm not entirely sure. Because it doesn't come up enough where you can identify if they've modded anything.
That's very cool. It's very interesting, the idea of like an actual play kind of not being about showing off the game, because I think lots of people imagine it to be showing off the game or teaching the people about the game.
There are absolutely things like that. I mean, D&D has their learn by play that they do, which is exactly that. It's showing you how to play the game.
Yeah, and lots of people learn how to play the game by watching actual plays. But I like this as kind of more like the mechanics are just there to help with decision making and randomness, but you're really just telling a story.
Yeah, it adds that element of chance to the improv that's going on.
It's the vehicle.
Yes.
That they use to drive the story, except the vehicle's a convertible and they're all hanging halfway out of it fighting. Swinging axes and...
Exactly. Get in, loser. We're going on an adventure.
So, When I'm interested, because you said they're coming up on some kind of crazy conspiracy, things are getting real scary. What exactly, like, what kind of scary is it? Is this, like, undead? Is this fairies? Is this, you know?
I am not truly far enough along to really judge. We have something called A Demon of the Sea, is literally the episode title that I'm on, which appears to be a sea monster.
Is it a literal demon, or is it like a pirate?
It may or may not be a kraken. I don't know.
Oh my goodness. At level 3. Wow.
There are slimy tentacles attacking the ship. That's all I know right now.
What episode are you on?
I believe it's episode 14, 15.
Okay.
They don't really number them. There's 26 episodes currently. So there's not a ton to actually catch up on, per se. And they're only an hour each. They're actually, as actual plays go, they're really short.
Yeah. That's kind of...
They also feel very short. Like, you're listening, wait, the show's over?
Right.
I've been here for an hour?
Right. It moves very quickly, which is kind of nice. I think WanderQuest actually makes a very good introductory podcast for someone who's, like, not used to an actual play, or maybe isn't as interested in committing to, like, the 3 hours that they would need for, you know, one Critical Role episode or something. It's more digestible because they're just barely an hour in most cases.
That's how long television shows are, right? It's a nice kind of like bite-sized chunk. We live in such a binge society.
Exactly.
It's nice to just be like, I don't have time to do a whole lot of stuff or like a lot of brain power, you know? I don't have a job where I can just sit and listen to podcasts all the time, but I can like listen for an hour on my bus ride, and that's manageable.
Exactly. Like, you could fit one episode into a relatively standard commute.
Yeah. So it's very character driven. There are lots of feels from what I've heard.
Yep. There are tons of emotional highs and lows. It definitely made me cry at least once.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It was very early in, too. I was super shocked, but there's just this one scene where Freela, who is the druid, she's a halfling, and she's the most precious cinnamon roll ever. You instantly want to protect her from the entire world. She's so friggin' cute. She is using her druid powers to basically talk to the cat in this household where some terrible stuff took place and try to, like, get some answers as to what happened, because the lady of the house doesn't know. And it was just so sad, because there was like this little pep talk of, you know, even though you're small, it doesn't mean you don't matter. And it was just, ugh.
She was giving a pep. Was the cat giving her a pep talk, or was she giving a pep talk to the cat?
I believe she was talking to the cat, but again, it's...
She was trying to convince the cat to help them.
Yeah. And she was kind of saying like, even though you're small, you can still make a big difference kind of a thing. Because of course she's a halfling, she's tiny. And it was just like, oh my God, my feelings.
Aw. That's really lovely. I like that.
Yeah, it was very sweet. And it was so cute. And the role playing by all of these ladies is really fantastic as well. They all get very into their characters. And Cid is as I said, she's a great dungeon master. You can tell she's enjoying herself. And she sounds so sweet all the time, except she does all these awful things to them and then giggles about it, which is great.
Oh, I don't know how that feels at all.
Nope, me neither. Do the awful things to your players, apologize profusely, but giggle the entire time. Yep.
Yeah. Was this a show that wanted to be all women players and all women characters on purpose? Or was this just like, do they talk about that at all? Or is this just kind of something that happened?
I don't know that they've ever really talked about it at all. If they have, it's not been in the context of the show itself. But it seems to have happened and it works very well.
Yeah.
Some of the themes that they bank on are, family plays into it a lot. Most of them are off on this quest because something happened in their family. But they also kind of start to gel as like this little found family, which is one of my favorite things that happens in D&D.
It's a good trope.
It's always such a good trope. There's, without being too heavy-handed on opinions, I think because we have this entire cast of women, the emotional content is placed, and it's given a lot of weight, and it's given center stage.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, because it's something that a lot of men are told to not share, you know?
Yeah.
And so it can be harder. It sounds like a game that a bunch of women would play.
Right. Yeah, it's like...
like not... not in like a, oh, like, oh, ladies don't like to fight or don't like
right.
to...
But it's more about investigating. There's a lot of social encounters, a lot of like trying to plan to sneak into these things and get answers and talk to people to find out information. They really only fight when they end up getting confronted. And at that point, they're just defending themselves, so...
They don't go picking fights.
Right.
Which is interesting, again, like with barbarians.
Yeah, you have a party that has two barbarians in it, yet they're not picking a fight at every turn.
You think they're just gonna go fight all the time, but...
Yeah, the party composition is interesting, because you have the two barbarians, and then you have one rogue, and then you have a druid. So, again, they're also not really, like, mechanically optimizing at all.
They almost are for what they're doing, though. Their crew specifically is very good for investigative, like, mysteries. Like, they have the rogue who can, you know, do the...
Sneaky rogue things.
The sneaky rogue things, breaking into things, like... investigating for clues. You have the scholar who knows about magic. They don't have magic themselves, but they know all these history books and all these magical rituals and all that sort of stuff that they know about. And then you talked about the druid being able to investigate animals, like interrogating, which, you know, normal characters wouldn't have access to. And then you do have the person who, I don't remember Lily, like, getting up in people's faces intimidating, but if you needed it.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely, like, that is her role, but she doesn't aggressively do it unless it's part of the plan. They've got a good cadence among them where they know their strengths, they know what they're there to do, and they excel with it. So there's good synergy with the way the party behaves together.
Yeah.
How often does that happen?
That happens when you have good role players together who lean into their characters.
I'm just thinking, like, to my own, because I've played, like, a lot of one-shots, and I've been playing D&D for a very long time. Just, I think that was one of the things that I found most interesting was the synergy between the group, the players, and the characters. I think they played into it very well.
I should be clear, like, when I say synergy, it doesn't necessarily mean that the characters just, like, were instantly friends and got along, because they definitely were not.
No, no, no.
But strategically, the way they use their abilities together when they, you know, embark on a plan, they do that. Which doesn't mean you have to be friends to work together well. They've proven that much.
Is there a lot of inter-party conflict?
Early on, Astrid and Del didn't appear to like each other very much. They were philosophically opposed, let's put it that way. Because Del, of course, was basically like, yeah, I'm not emotionally invested in this. I don't care. This is just a job. Let's just do this and get in, get out. And Astrid, of course, is very, very personally invested because she's trying to find her children.
Thief and scholar mom don't get along.
Yeah. Thief and scholar mom who rages.
Yeah.
Scholar rage mom.
Yeah. There's a turning point, which is a spoiler, so I won't get into it, but they do start to, as they put it, they build that bridge between each other a little bit, and they kind of start to see eye to eye more. And it's a nice turning point for their relationship.
It also sounds like, you know, we talk about, like, good role players and good player characters coming together really well, but I think it's also a real testament to Sydney as a DM that she was, okay, well, I have this not necessarily optimized for a typical adventure, so I'm gonna craft this thing that they're really good at, because, you know, this is a great party for investigation.
Right, yeah, they're built to be able to do that, and if the worst happens, well, they can obviously defend themselves.
It's not only that, but she was able to weave all of these stories together. I don't know how much she, like, guided their backstories or not, but the fact that they're all working together towards this common goal for different reasons is very good.
Yeah. That's always the really hard part, because a lot of times people will come when they create characters and they're like, I have all of these ideas. And even if you do a session zero where you kind of build everything together and you build your characters together, unless everybody's having a shared backstory, like, people are going to be there for different reasons. And it can be hard to say, how can I bring these people together?
Exactly. Especially when you have, as this group was, a party of strangers. Like, these characters did not know each other at all in their past. They have no mutual ties. None of them were friends or even enemies or, like, even knew each other at all before the campaign began.
Oh, that's very hard.
I don't think they even had, like, mutual acquaintances.
No.
I think it's literally four strangers.
Yeah, which is, like, I can attest personally, that is one of the hardest things to try and run and mesh together as a dungeon master.
It's also hard as players, too, because all of a sudden you're like, why am I traveling with these people for reasons other than we are all in a D&D game together?
together.
Yeah, it's like, why am I with these people who I maybe am fighting with unless we're just here doing a job to get money?
Or like, here are these people I don't like. Is it really worth it? You know, so it's very, it's, yeah, I think it's a real testament to the stuff that Cindy presents that gets them all invested and kind of forces interaction and teamwork to come together.
Exactly. It kind of weaves it all into this overarching problem that they have to stay together to solve because they've each got different hooks in it. Because of course, you know, Astrid is looking for her kids. Lily is trying to figure out what happened with her brother. Freela's trying to sort out why her father did what he did. Del's family is awful and therefore involved in the bad things.
Yeah. Explain to me, how are they awful? Besides the, like, are they like horrible demon worshipping people? Are they just like terrible and abusive? Are they...
Her mother is basically just, well, they're nobles first and foremost, and her mother is just a nasty, nasty woman. She's very frigid and is clearly out for herself. Their general involvement seems to, at the point I'm at, it seems like they were basically providing arms to this big scary army that is causing problems and may or may not be related to things. There are all these little clues that get dropped and discovered along the way, and they're slowly starting to knit things together more. But yeah, her family is kind of involved in that on some level. I don't think they know everything yet, but Del has basically written off her mother by this point.
As you mentioned, like, family is a really big theme in the show. Is there anything else that really ties things together, or is it just, I mean, family is a really good thing to tie everybody together, but...
I mean, that emerges for me as, like, one of the biggest themes. I don't think they did it intentionally, it just seems like it maybe kind of happened, but that's the nice thing about it, is it happened, and it happened really organically and beautifully.
It's one of the nice things about telling, like, collaborative storytelling, is that all of a sudden these themes do come up, and you don't intend them to, but it just happened.
Yeah, exactly. It's, like, really nice when you realize, like, oh my gosh, we've been touching on this entire time, and we didn't even realize it. It's just really cool when you kind of come to that realization as a player in a game. But as far as other kinds of themes, like I said, a mother's love is kind of an extension or a sub-theme of the family thing.
It's not just a mother's love as being a good thing or a mother's love as being, you know, something that's given, right? Because you have this mother who is a barbarian who's looking for her, like, loves her children so much that she has gone to all of these lengths. And then you also have Del, not very good mother.
You see the theme of a mother's love from two completely polar sides. Because, you know, as I said, there's Astrid, the mom who will literally go out and kill people to save her children. And then Del's mom, who pretty much wrote her off because she didn't fit the family mold. You kind of see all of these people are more than what you initially expect of them. Freela turns out to be a pretty good actress at one point, which is interesting. Just look at the Pirate Queen episodes, and that's all you need to know.
I remember reading that tweet and just being like, wait, what?
Tallulah. Which, that is so far been the funniest scenario that they've come across, and I was like laughing quite a lot like a fool at my desk while I was listening to those episodes. You know, Freela is honestly this like harmless seeming unassuming little halfling who's just happens to have druid powers, it seems like. She doesn't behave very competently most of the time, but she gets through and she gets protected by the others kind of latch on and want to protect her because she's so precious. But she does okay, and she always kind of keeps her chin up and tries. Del comes off as very frigid, but in fact, cares an awful lot and tries to force herself not to. And then, of course, you know, Astrid is the barbarian turned completely on its ear. The scholar-barian.
Scholbarian.
Scholbarian.
The librarian.
yes. Yes.
But essentially, they come off as one thing, but you see them prove to be competent in completely different ways. So everybody's a little bit of a surprise.
It sounds like there's a whole lot to love about this podcast, but... What specifically, like, why do you love it? What about it makes it this podcast you keep coming back to?
Gosh, all of those things. Other than all of those things, honestly, the amount of fun they're obviously having while they play is kind of infectious. Like I said, Cid, when she's running things, you can tell she's very honest as a dungeon master. She doesn't come off where she's trying to read it dramatically or anything. She's just being very natural about it. She plays in character where appropriate, but you still get that like essence of her in it, and her style is very apparent, which for me, as a dungeon master more often than I'm a player, it's kind of nice to hear another woman dungeon master and a style that is not, I don't know, a style that is hers and works for her. And it feels similar to how I feel when I'm dungeon mastering. So it's kind of validating in a way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's nice to hear something, you know, when people having fun, when somebody else is doing something like similar to yours and you're like, okay, so I am doing a good thing. Like this is fun.
Exactly. It's like, oh, okay, this isn't just me hoping I'm not too terrible. But yeah, like they clearly have fun. There's a story front and center. The character drama is kind of like the main piece of it, as you can tell, because I like fumble my way through the plot. I care more about just seeing these characters do whatever they're doing than the actual like plot. It's character driven, which I love.
That's kind of nice, because when you care a lot about characters, it doesn't matter if the plot doesn't advance. So you're just like,
isn't that like why Seinfeld was so popular?
Yeah, you'd be like, I would listen to these people go shopping for armor for an hour because it's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, because they're funny. They're fun.
I think out of everything in Dungeons & Dragons, my least favorite thing is shopping.
That is true. I'm not a fan of shopping episodes. But it kind of depends on how you do it.
No, I'm talking like as a player, as a DM. Just any of it. Like, I always just hand wave it. I love Burning Wheel because of the resources system.
I am not familiar with Burning Wheel at all. I need to rectify that at some point.
You should play Mouseguard first.
Yes, you should. Hashtag play Mouseguard.
Okay. Gosh, it's like you guys might be biased because you're currently in a Mouseguard campaign.
It's almost like it's our favorite game.
It's so weird.
Huh.
It's more that it's just like Burning Wheel.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
But the resources is very good because essentially like there's no goal. Well, there is money, but it's spent differently. But if you're just like, I want a thing, then your resources is a stat. So you just roll the dice to see
if you have the thing.
If you have the thing or not. Yeah. Huh. Like, or if you can find the thing.
Nice.
Sort of like in Dungeon World when you have your dungeon kit, except it's a stat instead of an equipment.
As someone who completely hates the minutiae of inventory management and counting money, I kind of love that.
I love all of the minutiae, but that's because I love spreadsheets.
I mean, I love spreadsheets, but I don't like inventory management.
How did you... I'm sorry.
It's, hey, we all have our own special brand of nerd.
It's really satisfying to like write down all the stuff you like and then when another player is trying to do something really weird and they're like, do we have like a, like, can I find a really big hat? And you can like look through your list of like whatever.
You're like, we do.
And you're like, actually.
Okay, I could see that being validating. And in fairness, having played Ryutama and being a giant fan of that system, please everybody play Ryutama at least once. You won't regret it. There's inventory management in there, and it's very important to the game, actually. Because, like, you need to manage your food and water or you're going to die.
With D&D, the inventory management can get really intense because there's so many other things to keep track of.
Yeah, it's like, it's one more thing on top of an already considerable sheet of stuff.
It's still better than third and or Pathfinder.
Okay, true. I will say, because I have a couple of the Pathfinder source books because I was somewhat fascinated with them when I got into D&D, and some of the classes just sound really cool, and I'm like, man, I wish somebody would convert these to 5e so I could play them.
You could just do like the Inquisitor class, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a paladin but like
more badass.
Yeah. Less fighty and more like investigate-y.
That's awesome. That sounds like my jam.
Yeah, it's...
Although on the inventory subject, I will say I'm warming slightly to having a bunch of crap in your bag in D&D because ball bearings are great.
Yep.
They're super great for tripping giants. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
I feel like you need a magnet. Like, if you had a magnet and then 1,000 ball bearings, like, you could throw them all out, but when you need to pick them back up again, you just activate the big magnet and they just...
Or you just get your party member who has a skeleton he raised from the dead to have the skeleton pick them all up while you guys go do some other stuff. Oh my god.
I think the point is just like, I think the intention was just buy new ball bearings because they're very cheap.
Probably. They're super disposable.
I'm still thinking of a skeleton, one by one, yep. Very meticulously picking up, because they're not very intelligent,
yep.
Picking up one ball bearing, putting it in a bag.
Yep. That was more or less what happened.
I saw a great use of a command spell where somebody poured a bag of salt on the ground and then commanded somebody to count the grains of salt.
Oh, wow.
To do that with ball bearings.
That's clever.
Yeah. Back to Wander Quest.
Yes, back Wander to Quest? Wander Quest. They don't really use items much that I've noticed to make that relevant.
If I recall, someone does, like, punch someone to death.
Yeah, maybe. I think. That sounds familiar.
They get attacked at some point, and I believe, spoiler, doesn't Astra just punch out a dude?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, she, like, knocks him clean out, basically.
Oops.
They have to, like, pull her off of him, because uh-huh. She's still going crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, why have inventory when you can just punch?
When you can punch? The monk motto.
Hey, unarmed strike is a thing, so you don't have to equip that.
So our famous question on too many RPGs, if you like...
Famous.
It's famous. If you like blank, you'll like this show.
If you like adorable halflings, you'll like this show.
That's fair.
I like adorable halflings. I'm a halfling fan, and don't at me. Oddly enough, I haven't played one yet, but I love them.
If you like halflings, you'll like...
Adorable halflings.
Adorable halflings specifically.
I mean, halflings usually are adorable, but that's not always the case.
I definitely think, like, adorable is, like, a behavior more than just, like, a physical thing. At least in my opinion, right?
Yes.
I wonder what it is about... Yeah, I wonder what it is. Like, is it just that halflings are small, and so we think... Like, small as in S-M-O-L.
Small.
Automatically in...
They're small.
Automatically means cute.
I think it's the small dog, big dog problem, where all dogs have the same amount of energy.
Mm.
And it depends on how far you bottle it. Sure. Like, small dogs are super hyperactive and sure. Rambunctious.
Yep.
I think that might apply to humanoids.
They're smaller, so they just have, like, all the energy.
They're more to spend. They have a higher metabolism.
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
I see.
I mean, that's a fair comparison of Freela. She's like a tiny puppy amidst all these other bigger dogs.
Yeah. And is the half-orc? I mean, the half-orc is a barbarian, but like, are they less?
She's pretty low-key for the most part, unless you do something like spook her, in which case she will just haul off and punch you, as she did to Del at one point.
Well, there we go. Theory confirmed.
Yeah. So small body, more energy to burn. So hyperactive halflings, everybody.
Is this a show that you recommend listening to from the beginning, or could we listen to the next episode and be caught up?
I would honestly say you might as well start from the beginning because they're only an hour each and there's only 26 episodes. It's not like trying to jump into Critical Role where you have an entire season you could try to catch up on of 100 some odd episodes.
Even the new season
is already...
They're like 30 episodes in and I'm just like 4 hours and I'm like, nope.
Yeah, I'm very behind. I binge in spurts, but it's way more intimidating to try to catch up on that than it would be on this.
See, my problem is 4 hours is about my limit for binging things.
Mm-hmm. And which gets you one episode.
Yeah, so it's not really a binge. It's just like, oh, I'm gonna watch one episode a week.
Yeah.
And never catch up ever.
Yeah. And, like, credit to Sydney for being able to fit a session in under an hour and have it actually accomplish anything at all. Because that's not always easy with some players, I feel like.
Especially story-driven games, because you want to talk a lot and you want to get through all of that stuff. And that mm-hmm. can almost take more time than, like, a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
You've got to give them time for the conversation to like ramp up, and characters don't always get to the point because, you know, the conversation will flow a certain way, or they get, you know, God forbid the characters get hung up on investigating this one thing that turns out to be a dead end or something. I don't know if it's one of those situations where they maybe have played more and they just trim it down because it's a podcast, but if they do that...
Yeah, maybe they record several episodes at once.
Yeah.
I've actually talked to Will about their podcasting method and they're like, yeah, no, we don't trim anything.
Huh.
Like, we cut like, maybe some pauses out, but it's pretty...
pretty much actual play.
Yeah.
I'm inclined to believe that, having, you know, played with that bunch before. They're usually pretty good about keeping focus and keeping the action moving, which is a testament to the DMs that Will drags into things.
Yeah, that's super impressive that you can get, like, 1 hour kind of adventures. It must be, like, no crosstalk. It's just, like, all game, all the time.
Not a lot. There's a little crosstalk every now and then, but they, you know, they'll comment out of character on things that they just did or something, and they'll kind of have a side tangent, but it's minimal. They kind of, you know, they say their piece, they giggle about it, and then they get back to the action.
That is a skill as a player.
Uh-huh.
That is
that is true,
because it's very easy to just, like, especially when you're playing with your friends, right? You're,
yeah,
just like, I just want to talk about something. Or, you know, doing a podcast when all of a sudden you're just like, I want to talk about inventory management and burning wheel.
Gosh.
What?
Oops.
What? That didn't happen.
Don't know that.
What are you even talking about right now?
I'm sorry. I don't know. It's just like a weird weird idea I had in my head.
Yeah, it's strange.
Don't know where it came from.
Totally weird.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for coming to talk about Wander Quest. I always try and catch at least one episode of the shows that people come on here to talk about. But, like, Wander Quest is, like,
yeah,
is definitely going on my list. Like, I'm downloading it right now.
It's worth the time. It's absolutely worth the time. It's enjoyable.
If people want to know more about you, Jess, or talk to you about the shows you're on or Wander Quest, how can they do that?
They can find me on Twitter. I'm always around on there. And I am at Little Cup of Joe on the Twitter. I'm also on Twitch, streaming video games and other junk. And I am on Encounter Roleplay on Tuesdays in the Long March. I play Lucy, the unluckiest wizard ever. It's wonderful. It's scary, but it's wonderful. And I apparently am also super unlucky because I roll ones a lot. People want to actually just follow the show. They are Wander Quest Pod on Twitter.
Oh yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
Also, you really can't go wrong if you just follow Encounter RP and then find all their shows.
Encounter Roleplay is full of good things. They do so many things.
Yep. And a lot of the ladies on Wander Quest are also in a lot of their other shows as well. So if you need more of them, there's more to find.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us about this wonderful thing.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much to Jessica for being on the show, the cast of Wander Quest for putting together an amazing actual play, Jeff for being a sound wizard, and you, the audience, for listening.
If you want to tell us what you thought of this episode or suggest a show for a future episode, you can tweet us at TooManyRPGs, or you can contact Lauren at JL_NiceGirl,
or Ethan at SuperRobotBear. If you like this episode, please leave us a review on iTunes and recommend us to your friends. It really helps us out, and it makes us happy.
Catch you next time, because there's just too many RPGs.